Coming up next on Insights on PBS Hawaii, should Hawaii require vaccinations for all healthy children? Aloha and welcome to Insights. I'm Malia Matic, your host for tonight's show. In 2013, the National Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that at 80%, Hawaii had among the highest vaccination rate in the United States. As for the other 20%, some can't get the shots because they're too young or they have health conditions that make the vaccines too risky. Others have religious or philosophical objections to some or perhaps all vaccinations. While there are currently no measles cases in Hawaii, outbreaks connected to Illinois daycare centers and Disneyland have brought the debate to the forefront. Are unvaccinated children putting those who can't be vaccinated at risk? Tonight, should Hawaii require vaccinations for all healthy children? If you'd like to join the discussion on mandatory vaccinations, please call, email, or tweet your questions and comments during tonight's live broadcast. Now to our panel. Dr. Sarah Park is the state epidemiologist and chief of the Department of Health's Disease Outbreak Control Division. In 2012, she was appointed to the National Biodefense Science Board to help prevent, prepare for, and respond to public health emergencies. Senator Josh Green served two terms in the State House of Representatives before being elected to the Senate in 2008. Senator Green is chairman of the Health Committee and is also an emergency room physician on the Big Island. Dr. Leonard Horowitz is a retired dentist who now works as a public health expert. Dr. Horowitz speaks and writes about why people should opt for natural cures instead of being vaccinated. Janet Edgehill spent 28 years as an electrical engineer for the Department of Defense. She recently earned a doctorate to learn about the education of autistic children like her 7-year-old son, who she believes was vaccine injured. Thank you all so much for joining us tonight. Dr. Park, if I could start with you. How much risk do unvaccinated children pose to the state in the event of a measles outbreak here?
I think they pose quite a significant risk, not only to themselves, but to the community. Hence, should they be opting out of vaccination, we not unlike other states in the nation, will take the measures to protect them and those around them by asking them to exclude themselves from school and from the community in general during the incubation phase if they've been exposed. That's so we can monitor them, they could, and make certain that they get the appropriate care, but also to protect other kids who would be, potentially in danger from getting the disease. So they pose quite a significant risk. But I might also add that the risk now is not just from unvaccinated children, but unvaccinated adults, because a number of kids have now grown up, and we now are seeing a sort of a changing epidemiology in that we are seeing unvaccinated kids being affected. We're now seeing the unvaccinated adults, the kids who grew up, and now bringing the diseases back home to Hawaii and spreading it in our communities. And many of these diseases are actually worse getting them as an adult. Mm-hmm. So the fear is, for them as well, the worry is that we'll start to see some complications that are going to occur, are more likely to occur in adults. And certainly those over 20 are more likely to have complications from the measles virus than say those between 5 and 20.
And those complications?
They could be as minor as ear infection, otitis media, diarrhea, pneumonia, which can also be quite severe. And then on the more extreme side of the spectrum, something called encephalitis, brain infection, inflammation, and even, hospitalization because of all the complications, and then unfortunately death, which fortunately is usually rare or uncommon. But, there are all these types of complications. And then, of course, the long-term complication that many people aren't really aware of is something called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis, which I unfortunately have taken care of a child who was previously vaccinated. And that's a long-term complication that occurs in people who have recovered from the measles infection, and usually about 7-10 years, maybe a little bit longer down the line. And there's no way to predict who's going to succumb to this. But they do, and it's a progressive neurological and mental degeneration that's usually fatal. It's heartrending to diagnose it and to watch it happen.
All right.
Uncertain that it is, but what percentage of individuals would contract this, as opposed to how many people have vaccine injuries, and a realistic look at vaccine injuries, which don't always occur right on the table?
I agree completely. The number one issue that's been completely neglected, grossly neglected, and it's a violation of the public's faith and trust in the public health department, is the fact that there's no definitive risk-benefit analysis done. The cornerstone of public health is to make sure that we're not killing and maiming more people than we're helping and saving. And the fact is, without the definitive data on knowing how many people are being injured, essentially what you're doing is you're propagandizing essentially what amounts to the mass killing of people or maiming of people for profit for the pharmaceutical industrials.
All right, let me get Dr. Green's choice on that.
Well, first, let me put this into perspective. You know, I want to be respectful of everyone's opinion. Before vaccinations, polio caused paralysis in vast segments of society and killed people. Before vaccinations, smallpox devastated societies, killing millions of people. Before flu vaccinations, we had global pandemics. Now, I respect people's choices in life of whether they're going to get immunizations or not for their children, but we could be wiped out if we didn't have at least some capacity to immunize ourselves. This has basically been the greatest public health success that we've seen. Now, it is tragic if people have concerns and these complications. When I see people in the ER that have meningitis that they could have prevented, I still have relationships with people who suffered polio. It is so tragic that I think we have to be at least mindful that vaccinations have made a big difference for humanity.
Well, speaking of the polio vaccine.
Please go ahead.
The polio vaccine initially was just, there was so much faith put into it that it was given to a child of a CDC individual, and the child died, maybe the grandchild. You might be more familiar with this. It also was contaminated with simian virus 40, so-called because it was the 40th monkey virus. It's cultivated in rhesus monkeys.
It's a hideous story. The reality about what the senator just said is really incomplete. And again, omissions and misrepresentations and laws, fraud. So eventually to say that the polio vaccine caused the disappearance of polio, you have to forget first Salk, and Salk's vaccines were hideously contaminated with SV40, which caused horrific cancer pandemics. The reality is that, in fact, the Salk vaccine replaced by the Sabin vaccine, which really wasn't that much better because it was still live attenuated viruses, the killed Salk vaccine was never fully killed because of the SV40, the 40th monkey virus ever discovered. And two brilliant women went to the National Institutes of Health director, Smidell, and said to him, if you continue, we've tested the Merck pharmaceutical polio vaccine off the shelf, and if you continue to allow these vaccines to go out, I guarantee you over the next 20 years, you'll have epidemics of cancer unlike the world has ever seen. That woman was Bernice Eddy, and it was initially called SE polyoma virus, and essentially it took her 10 years before she got to the United States Congress and in an appeal because she had been demoted, defunded, ostracized, persecuted, and SE polyoma was stolen. They renamed it, Dr. Hilleman at Merck renamed it the SV40 virus. Basically, it was sexist, it was outrageous, and it was a complete cover-up of what the true reality is with regard to the original polio vaccines.
Okay, let me give, oh, I'm sorry.
I just want to mention quickly that SV40 is still today being isolated in tumors, in cancerous tumors. There is also demonstration of vertical transmission between parent to child.
That's right.
Through the genetics.
It's hideous.
Okay, may I give Dr. Park a chance to respond to
that? I'm just curious as to the data, your data, in terms of claiming that polio virus or vaccine is directly linked to epidemics of cancer, because I certainly haven't seen those studies and that data. But more importantly, you know, there have been huge successes in preventing the incidence of polio, and we're making huge strides in eliminating this, eradicating. You know, and let me just point out for folks who may not understand the terms eradication and elimination. For viruses that only exist in humans, such as polio, there is a hope, and such as smallpox, which we have eradicated, there is a hope to actually eradicate it. That means actually wipe it off the face of the earth, because it only exists in humans. And that is the goal with the polio initiative for WHO, World Health Organization, the Centers for disease control and prevention, and those of us in public health. With measles virus, unfortunately, that virus can exist in humans and primates. So our goal with measles virus and viruses like that, or other pathogens like that, is actually to eliminate it. It doesn't mean we can, it basically means we can't be successful in wiping it off the face of the earth, but we can be successful in eliminating it from the human population. The CDC declared, you know, and the World Health Organization declared the measles virus eliminated from the U.S. in the year 2000. That meant there was no continuous transmission for 12 months of measles in the U.S. at all. That was a huge success, but also it was a sobering success because the original goal to eliminate measles was 1982. And so you can see it took quite a long time to actually meet that goal. And now what we're seeing since in the ensuing time is a lot of stepping backwards. You know, we made those successes were hugely, largely in part because of the vaccination successes. But now, because we are seeing increasing pockets of people who are refusing vaccine, now because we're seeing disease basically cropping up again in places where it had been largely eliminated in Europe, where we thought that, you know, they were being successful too. We're seeing more and more disease elsewhere. It's being brought home, and now we're also seeing it's not being brought home to us by visitors, by people who don't even live here, but it's being brought home by our own. And as these pockets of unvaccinated grow, we're basically continuing to step backwards in time. And it's really unfortunate. I agree with Dr. Green.
There's no data.
Can I finish?
Well, you've spoken now for a couple
let's
minutes.
Let's go ahead and let her finish her thought, and then let's go to you, Dr.
I just want to say, you know, I respect people's opinions. And I would respect that I would hope that they would also respect mine. I don't anticipate during this conversation we're going to change each other's mind. And that is not my goal. My goal is just to present our side of it, essentially, and hopefully educate some folks who might still have questions. And that's really it. Because I understand you feel very passionately, so do we. I've taken care of patients who basically have succumbed or have suffered severe complications from vaccine-preventable diseases that could have been easily preventable. And so, of course, I'm passionate. I've had children, I've had parents beg me to do something to help their child. I mean, can you imagine being begged by a parent to help them at all costs and to deal with a parent who knows, understands that it could have been prevented. So I understand your passion, but I also would hope that you respect mine.
Okay, let's go to Dr. Horowitz, and then I'd like to hear from you.
First of all, you claimed, quote, significant risk that unvaccinated children pose to vaccinated children. And you demand from us data on cancer rates increased from vaccinations. But
I'm asking, not demanding.
You have no data on the concept of what you just stated. Essentially, what you've just stated is not scientific. It's completely unscientific. In fact, it's strictly propaganda. Now, Dr. Park, this is from our local newspaper, the Tribune Herald, and it says in here that you're quoted as saying that people like us, it says health official, to not have the vaccine, in my opinion, is crazy. Well, frankly, that makes people like myself crazy. And it makes this PBS, which has done a morning edition stating that breastfeeding mothers and people who engage in natural medicine are all crazy. In fact, they slur them.
Excuse me. Please don't put breastfeeding mothers in the whole
pot.
No,
that was a PBS.
As a pediatrician, I am a proponent of breastfeeding.
Well, that's very nice. But it was these people are disparaged. And now this discussion deals with mandatory vaccinations. I had a daughter who was literally evicted from Hilo High School, straight A student, first year freshman varsity, made varsity track and field, told to leave. Literally, we had to have a lawsuit involved because she refused for religious reasons to not take the tuberculosis skin test. So I'm very familiar with everything from the science to the politics of this. And what I'm saying is that we're not crazy. Let me let Ms. Edgehill, the tuberculosis skin test is not a vaccine. It's a test.
It's not a vaccine.
That's right, but it's still, you're injecting foreign RNA and foreign DNA.
We're not mixing ideas here.
Okay, and now, wait, I want to give Ms. Edgehill a chance.
I brought a few charts with me because I believe the risk of measles and adverse effects from contracting wild measles are grossly overstated. This is just a chart I pulled off from the Centers for Disease Control website from their vital statistics. And we can see that the vaccine was licensed in about 1963. It wasn't widely introduced until mm-hmm. after that. You can see this shows the death statistics per 100,000. And we can see, you can see, Dr. Green, that it's well less than one person, about maybe 0.25, maybe less than that. I have something here from the British Medical Journal. These writers agree that measles is nowadays normally a mild infection. When you say that polio is eradicated, measles has almost been eradicated, well, what about nutrition? What about sanitation?
Exactly.
Polio, 49,500 cases of polio from the vaccine in India, in the peer-reviewed Indian journal, which I'd be happy to share with you. The vaccine schedule continues to increase out of control. The kids are getting between 49 and upwards of 60 vaccines prior to starting school. I think one thing that we can all agree on is that we're not genetic clones. There are genetic issues that we really need to do better at identifying. There's plenty about this in the peer-reviewed literature, and I'm sure you've read Reeve's study and where the Army has done. They vaccinate for everything, and they were able to isolate a gene, the MTHFR polymorphism, so mutations on a particular gene, which is generally responsible for methylation, for the way that our bodies detoxify. They identified this in two studies as a risk factor for adverse events. Then I have peer-reviewed literature here by Dr. Gregory Polin. He also happens to be the editor-in-chief of Vaccine Journal. It's the peer-reviewed journal of vaccine developers and vaccine manufacturers. He's coined a whole new term and a whole new study. That's now studies that are called vaccinomics or adversomics. He knows. He's identified a number of genes that we know not only will they perhaps cause vaccine injury, but they also, people with certain genes will be conferred with no immunity whatsoever from a vaccine.
Okay, let me move on to Dr. Green now. Your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, it's a passionate topic, so I really appreciate the discussion. Let me first start by saying that in 2000, over 750,000 kids globally died of measles, okay? So 770,000 children died.
In third world countries.
In the world. Children are children to a doctor.
How many died of cancer? Or
well, let's let
after
Dr.
You
Green,
stop interviewing, let's have, after you stop interrupting yeah. me, we'll have a civil conversation, yeah. Doc.
Let's all give everyone a chance, because viewers are turning in so that they can learn. So let's give everyone their chance to speak. So Dr. Green.
So I say, and I worked as a missionary doctor, even though I'm not a missionary, I'm a Jew, okay, married to a Mormon girl, I immunized my two kids, okay, but 770,000 children died of measles globally, and as a family physician and now an ER doc, that hurts, okay? Also, I'm not saying that we shouldn't continue to improve vaccinations and their formulations. Of course we should. That's science. And I appreciate the statements that were made by Janet. So there's nothing, I'm not arguing with anyone about always improving the science of our immunology, of what we propose as public health officials. I'm not even trying to defend anyone globally. I'm saying that if we can save children's lives, if we can look at the data, which I believe is sound, we should do it.
Okay, I'd like to get to some questions. From Lloyd, don't schools in Hawaii already require children to be vaccinated in order to be admitted? Dr. Park, could you answer that?
Yes, so for school entry in the state of Hawaii, it is required to adhere to the vaccine schedule. However, in the state of Hawaii, unlike many other states in the nation, you can request an exemption from that vaccine requirement, either a medical exemption, so a physician would testify, would basically validate the fact that there's a problem with your immune system. Usually it's, for instance, a child who's on chemotherapy, and obviously that affects their immune system.
So they just medically can't get the vaccination, they're exempt.
Right, okay. So they're exempt for that period that they're on the chemotherapy. It's not a, you know, all for life kind of thing. But the other potential is to request a religious, what we call a religious exemption, which really in all intents and purposes is essentially a philosophical exemption, because a parent can just write in and say it's against their personal belief. And so that is a route that people can take.
And are those exemptions going up or down? Do we have any sense of what the trend is?
The medical exemptions have stayed stable, which is a good news in some regards, because obviously if it went up, we'd worry that we're seeing being some sort of medical issue among our children. The religious exemptions, however, just like in many other states, we're starting to see it edge higher and higher. And that's what I'm referring to, is that is the concern. You know, before people used to, you maybe say, oh, well, we know this community on this particular island that's where all these anti-vaccine folks are. But what we are seeing now is it's scattered throughout the state. And it's like every other state in the nation, we're seeing it in every community. And as I was just saying to someone, it could be your next door neighbor. It's not just one area of one population. So it is starting to grow, but this is an option for kids in Hawaii, for their parents, if they are really strongly against it. However, as I mentioned earlier, we do have the authority to protect the public's health and again protect the individual, and say if you've been exposed or if you actually have a vaccine preventable disease, I mean, I'm sorry, but you need to be isolated from the rest of the public.
I have a quick follow-up question to that. If, say, a small private school that isn't part of the DOE were to want to change their philosophy about allowing
this
children...
This applies public or private.
A private school cannot decide we're going to change our policy.
This applies to mm-hmm. public and private. The only exceptions would be children who are homeschooled.
Okay.
Because they're not in a group setting,
they can choose to... Okay, I'm sorry, you wanted to say, Ms. Edgell?
You know, I've forgotten.
Okay, that's all right.
What I did want to point out, actually, was that live viruses do shed. We do, in fact, have shedding, and you guys have shared sad stories of patients who have succumbed to what you term vaccine-preventable diseases. I have a friend whose daughter at 15 months received the MMR. She quickly deteriorated, descended into autism, bowel disease, all sorts of other things. But on top of that, 3 weeks after receiving the vaccine, the measles virus shed in her poop, in her diaper. Her mom was changing the diaper. Didn't know she was perhaps an immunocompromised person. Developed multiple sclerosis, a very severe case. She had to be institutionalized, a young woman in her 30s. So there are all sorts of cases where vaccinated people do in fact shed. We know that the DTaP vaccine, for example, is not fully effective. Tons of research, peer-reviewed research, about the lack of effectivity. But what we hear from the medical community is it's unvaccinated people. There's a study that showed over 80% of people in the California outbreak were fully vaccinated. Another, I don't know, 10% or so were partially vaccinated, and the remainder percentage were not vaccinated at all.
This is in reference to what you were saying earlier and what Josh was saying, mm-hmm. that I agree with him and agree with you in that, you know, we are constantly trying to improve the medical tools that we have to protect the public's health, to protect children and as I said, not just children, but adults. And so, yes, the vaccines, and I've said this over and over, vaccines are not perfect in their protection.
Well, they're not
Nothing
perfect,
is 100%.
And they injure, and you
and
demean
so,
wait, the lives
wait,
who
so
are injured.
So I'm addressing your comment that, you know, there could be fully vaccinated individuals who unfortunately get disease. And there is always a possibility because, as you yourself pointed out, and I agree with you, everyone's immune system's a little different.
A little different,
therefore, in that, you know, I'm agreeing with you on that. And that's why you cannot say that 100%, you can't
when
say
100%
vaccine efficacy.
When over 80% of a population
is
fully vaccinated, so, contract the disease, what does that
but
say?
But if you think about
in November of 2013...
The goal is to increase the immunity of the entire population.
But it isn't doing
Understanding that there will always be a handful of people
who
will just not
respond. Is 82% a few to you? Is that a few? Because it seems to me like it's the majority.
Actually, I would disagree with you
and
on the efficacy on that.
Are religious people crazy? Okay, so. Are people who are conscientious objectors crazy
okay,
in your opinion?
I have to... when you reference, I want to do one clarification for our viewers. You mentioned MMR. Is that measles, mumps, rubella?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's the vaccine that you're referring to, and that
yes.
has received some controversial
yes,
coverage.
Yes, in fact, Merck is being sued by two whistleblowers, and there's also a CDC whistleblower who was providing information to Congressman Posey's office. He's indicated that statistically significant information was withheld from a 2004 study that showed a rapid increase, 3.4-fold in African-American males who received the vaccine prior to 3 years of age. This is very important information. Hopefully, he'll be providing further information. He released an email from Colleen Boyle, who's in charge of developmental disabilities at the CDC, in which she said, well, you know, it's not usually diagnosed until 3. How about if we introduce 18-month-olds and 1-month-olds and 2-year-olds into this? What does that do to our data? So it shows you they're somewhat cooking the books. in some cases. But if I can get back to DTaP and to diphtheria pertussis tetanus, the FDA released a press release in November 2013, and they said, you know, we've been testing Bordetella pertussis vaccine in orangutans, which have a similar physiology, for the purposes of this sort of a trial. We have found pertussis germs are now growing in the backs of their throats, and they are contagious for several weeks with pertussis. So we could argue that vaccinated individuals are in fact spreading disease. It's not a catch-all, and we need to elevate this argument or this discussion beyond vaccines good, disease bad.
I understand what you're saying. I just want to make sure I understand what she's saying.
Okay, let's go ahead.
I just like some clarification.
Let's have a quick moment with you, and then let's go to you, Dr. Horowitz.
I just want to make sure I am understanding what you're saying, because I don't want to misunderstand you.
Okay.
But you're saying that you're saying that people who are vaccinated against pertussis or whooping cough, for those folks who don't know, are spreading whooping cough to other people?
They are, in fact, spreading whooping cough to other people.
This is where I have a little bit of a problem scientifically with that.
Because
the vaccines, that vaccine is an inactivated vaccine. It doesn't even contain the entire bacteria.
You were right. It only contains
antigens.
They don't know. Do scientists know everything?
So the answer is no. You yourself are an engineer. You have a science background. Mm-hmm. So you know, although you are not a biologist, you would know then that scientifically does not make sense.
She's very articulate.
Have you taken care of a child with whooping cough? Have you taken care of a child with autism?
Let me answer your question.
You'll tell me about it.
I received probably at least 3 or 4 telephone calls from parents of injured children after vaccines, and I'm sick and tired of it, frankly. The reality is you're not paying any attention to the data of the risks versus what you claim are the benefits. There are significant risks.
In fact, I do. As a pediatrician, okay.
Excuse me, let me finish.
The fact that you're not aware
that the fact is, let's let everyone
have a chance to simply say their information. Dr. Horowitz, please go ahead, finish your point,
you
and then
much.
I have a follow-up question for you. So if
Thank
you could finish
you.
Your point.
If vaccines worked, why would you be so concerned about those few people, let's say 3% in Hawaii, who, for religious reasons or any other reason, philosophical, they exempt out?
Because
number
I worry
one.
About them.
Oh, yeah, you want herd immunity. Now, wait a minute.
No.
Let's take a look at your conflicting interests. Do you work on the board of the National Biosurveillance and Response with Pfizer?
No.
Pfizer is not one of 7 members of that board.
It's a government board. It's an
advisory committee. Is one of the major people administering decision-making on a national basis with Pfizer Group and representing now an influence on the national response, emergency response?
There are members from different walks of life on
that
board.
How many are there?
And we are not supposed to be bringing in our sort of commercial interests or
whatnot. Exactly, you're not supposed to be. That's my point.
But
the point is, it's outrageously biased.
Let's make this a little less personal, though.
Yeah.
Let's talk about facts. Everyone?
Look, if you saw a murder going on in the street, and you don't report that, you have a public duty to report that, to do everything in your power to stop that crime. That, in fact, that's public duty,
doctor. I just want to clarify,
so it is personal. There are children that I'm hearing from parents weekly, many of them, who are outraged that the government, in this case, Dr. Park, represents the entire national security apparatus that is potentially keeping us from an outbreak and emergency.
And
the reality is that the manner in which they're going about doing this is injecting foreign RNA, foreign DNA from bacteria, viruses, fungus, yeast, chicken embryo, bovine fetal serum, monkey kidney tissues.
I'd like to
with smallpox,
to your...
it's cow pus. You might as well inject eye of newt, because the reality is they don't know what the heck they're doing.
Okay, I know I do want to get back to you. I would like to give Dr. Green a chance to talk. And I would also like to just ask everyone, I understand this is a passionate topic, but we're not going to learn anything tonight shouting over each other. And everyone's been invited here as a guest, so let's not attack anyone. Let's just let everyone have their chance to say something. Dr. Green.
Look, I'm just pleased to be the calm one. Okay, so, you know, it's been a long day. Okay, but look, first of all, I don't know everyone at this table well. Dr. Park is an extraordinary individual. I'm going to say this because it's not acceptable to me personally to have someone reference murder and this and that and then accuse someone. This is a person that works to prevent, from her paradigm, which I respect, and if others don't, that's okay, to prevent infection from spreading. I turn to her and trust her to protect my children. I'm just saying that as a father, okay? Now, people can argue about immunizations, they can argue about the mandates, and they can argue about the efficacy. But let's keep it at science. And it's good to talk about whether this science is good or a better study could be done. That's how science works, and we should always endeavor to improve science. But I will not allow vaccinations and their value to be dismissed. By the same token, I never, you know, talk down someone if they're concerned, because we can always learn more. And if we learn through science that vaccinations hurt someone, if we learn that, then we will adjust them or we'll change policy.
Then let me ask you this follow-up question from Bill in IAEA. Are there reasons other than vaccinations that might account for more cases of autism? And I'll give everyone a chance to respond with their opinion. But Dr. Green, may I start with you?
Absolutely. I'm very focused on this issue. Autism is tragic. It breaks my heart. It breaks everyone's heart that has a child. Absolutely, though, is, from my perspective, a multifactorial problem. I have personally been very concerned about many factors that affect children and result in autism, result in autism spectrum diagnoses. I think, personally, that a lot of the problems from industrialized society are contributing. I think it is pesticides. I think our diagnoses are becoming more sophisticated, and that has changed the number. And so those are the kind of concerns I have. And I'm also open at all times for the science to absolutely proceed. So we find out whether there's a genetic cause, whether it's fractured DNA. I don't know. I'm not a molecular biologist, but I know it's not just one factor, because that doesn't make sense to me as a developmental problem.
Mm-hmm. I was speaking with a dear friend who her life has been affected by this, and she said something to me that I was wondering, is this a middle ground for everyone? She said, I believe that vaccines have value for people. She thought that there was a possibility that her child and other children might fall into a group for whom vaccines are dangerous, and that perhaps there need to be studies to identify if there are some children for whom vaccines are dangerous, while for the majority of the public, they are beneficial. Any thoughts on that? Is there some sort of middle ground there?
I think we know that, and I think that we can agree with that. And I think that, you
so
know,
might
if, you're,
that
if you're happy to look at this, this is a peer-reviewed literature about vaccinomics, how we're determining the ultimate goal of individualizing vaccines to different genetic polymorphisms. I mean, we know that they hurt people. And you is the only product that I know of that is indemnified. So in 1986, a law was passed called the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. And so what the intent of this act was to give easy access to a financial settlement for children who were injured by vaccines. But vaccine manufacturers had come and said, no, this is an unavoidably unsafe product. We're not going to make them anymore. And so to ensure a steady supply of vaccines, the government went ahead and indemnified vaccine manufacturers. Now, if you were to prescribe a medication for me, and let's say fainting was a side effect, and I called you in a week and I said, you know, I fainted twice, you would probably say, it's listed as a side effect. You should stop taking it. But if the minute we say that vaccines can cause side effects, which are all listed right there in the vaccine inserts, and some of them are pretty horrific, and I have one for DTaP here. Autism and SIDS are listed.
And DTaP is, can you explain?
Sorry, that's the diphtheria, tetanus, and acellular pertussis. Okay. So the whole cell pertussis vaccination was causing an awful lot of vaccine injuries. And so they tried, in an effort to make it safer, they remove, they take only the antigen, so only the part of the cell that's going to produce an antibody. But this information is out there. We know that there are huge subsets of people for whom vaccination is not safe. Yet, on day one of life, we vaccinate neonates with an immature blood-brain barrier against a sexually transmitted, blood-borne, you know, usually a disease associated with drug addicts, hepatitis B.
Yeah.
And we know that this does not confer immunity for more than a few years. So is your toddler having sex?
So, yeah. Dr. Park, may I jump to you? What is the thinking behind this vaccination?
Behind the hepatitis B vaccination, mm-hmm. since we're changing gears mm-hmm. here. So first of all, yes, it's an STD, a sexually transmitted disease, but it's also been linked to high rates of hepatocarcinoma or liver cancer, which is a very severe disease and in many cases incurable. You know, this is one of the successes of vaccines.
What are the risk factors for infants?
Can I finish? and so, you know, some of these infants, unfortunately, you know, they're high-risk infants. Not all infants, but we can't predict. We don't know the history behind every mother and every child. And so the hope is that we can prevent potentially a bloodborne risk.
That the mother might be giving this to the child?
The mother might have given it to the child, in some way. Or the child may, in the course of their life, they're in a situation where they're introduced to it, not necessarily through a sexually transmitted act or through bloodborne pathogen, maybe even, unfortunately, through a nosocomial, through a healthcare associate, maybe they get a blood transfusion and it was missed, which hopefully these days is not likely, but blood transfusion being the. So I'm just putting out there the different potential scenarios.
I understand that.
But other thing is, we're trying to capture the opportunity before they get to that risk period, because unfortunately, kids are becoming more sexually active earlier in life. Not all, but there are some out there. You can't predict. I could tell you some stories as a pediatrician that I've experienced that would really surprise a lot of parents out there. And so we know this is a reality. We know it's not all, but it's trying to grab an opportunity where we can find it, and that's why we vaccinate and prevent against the potential.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it's not fair.
I don't disagree with you, one size doesn't fit all. I don't disagree with you that saying that there's always room and need for study. And that's why I would agree with you. That is why there's all sorts of research trying to see, is there a link between some sort of adverse effect and vaccine? And over and over and over again, they keep not finding it.
But that's not factual. What the media points out are certain studies that are pro-vaccine, and that's all you get.
But I'm trying to point out to you is that that's why we continue to look for it, and that's why the science is important, because we are concerned. And the concern is not for just, the entire population, but for each and every child. And it's not that we're trying to protect, everyone else. We're trying to protect everyone.
All right. Dr. Horowitz, what would you like to say?
Yes. Well, the issue of mandatory vaccinations, actually, you've got to go back in the law. The first case was Jacobson versus the Boston Public Health Department. And the reality at that time, and the reason why decision was made, exactly what Dr. Park is saying, that for the benefit of the herd, the mass public, we're going to neglect the individual. In that case, Mr. Jacobson was a minister, a religious person, who said, no, I'm not going to buy into this vaccine. I don't want to intoxicate my body, because Leviticus 19:19 says to keep my blood pure. What happened was that in those days, we didn't have what we have today that's sitting on the board with Dr. Park on the National Biosurveillance Board. We didn't have a drug cartel. We had people who had faith in the medical system, they had faith in medical doctors, and they had faith in the truth being told to the people. Today, we have outrageous violations, criminal contempt. The fact is that this organization that Dr. Park sits in, outrageously, has been fined.
Is it biosurveillance or biodefense?
Biodefense and surveillance and response.
It's actually been renamed as the National Preparedness and Science, National Preparedness and Response Science Board. And by the way, I have just terminated my tenure on that, and I'm now on the National Advisory for Children and Disasters Board, which is a completely separate issue. But let me just say, you keep pointing out we're on this board.
I'd like to talk about Pfizer for a second.
That committee, that board, doesn't deliberate on vaccines or things like
that. For the federal government vaccinations for the children, and the senator is now advancing. Is advancing legislation
right
now.
And you're pulling things in that are out of context.
Please.
Okay, I'd like to actually move on to some things that would be informative to people.
One thing. This pharmaceutical company called Pfizer has been fined by the United States Attorney General $1.3 billion for fraud. And it's the biggest outrage, and it's the biggest payment and damage award that has been given to the federal government for the violations of the public's trust by Pfizer. $2.3 billion also for what was called Bextra, which is an arthritis drug. And this is the organization, in fact, I brought the documentation here from the European Union, because both the senator and Dr. Park is saying we need to go forward with the vaccination for the pneumococcal, for the otitis media situation. And the fact is that the European Union, in this sophisticated study, said there's no good risk-benefit analysis. In fact, they conclude that, no, it doesn't seem like they should go where the United States has gone. Thanks to Dr. Park and her colleagues sitting on that board and on ACIP.
Please don't bring that board into it because it's totally out of context with
but
what our discussion is.
But you're saying the same thing.
Okay, let's go to some questions because I think we've talked about that enough. From Robert Allen, what happened to smallpox in America? Is there a smallpox vaccination? Can anyone address that?
There is a smallpox
Dr. Green.
There is a smallpox vaccine.
It is given to the military folks because of the potential threat that there could be a reintroduction of smallpox from a terrorist event, but it's considered eradicated from the world because there is no wild type or normally occurring smallpox in the world. It was a huge success, as I mentioned earlier. So there's no smallpox disease, but there are, just as here in the U.S. as well as some other countries, they maintain a vaccine just in case because we know that there is a potential some terrorist out there could reintroduce it to the population.
And that's a threat. Mm-hmm. A question I got a lot from people in talking about the fact that we were going to have this show is, if you're an adult, if you had the measles vaccine when you were a child, if you choose vaccination, do adults need to be revaccinated with this uptick in measles?
No, so generally speaking, if you were born before 1957, you were considered to likely have had the disease because the disease was rampant at the time and it is so highly communicable. I mean, essentially, in a room full of susceptible individuals, if you drop someone with measles in that room, 90% of those individuals will become infected. It's pretty much almost guaranteed if you're susceptible, you're going to get the disease. Mm-hmm. So it's felt that if you were born before 1957, likely you had the disease because pretty much by the time you were 15 years of age, no one escaped having had the disease. Mm-hmm. So you're safe in terms of you're naturally immune. Since then we expect that people should have been vaccinated with at least one dose. Now the caveat is that the early forms of a measles vaccine, they actually had an inactivated form, not a live virus vaccine, which was not very effective in terms of immunity. So for those individuals, they actually say up until, they were probably using that vaccine up until about 1967 or so. And so the recommendation is up until that point, for those adults, you may want to consider, it would be highly recommended, especially if you're going to a high-risk situation, you travel a lot internationally, for example, that you get the current MMR formulation, which is a live virus, because it's a highly effective vaccine. Not 100%, but it's highly effective. So at least one dose. For everyone else, it's expected that, over time, probably most adults have gotten two doses because we instituted the second dose in 1989. The first dose, as Janet mentioned, was begun to be distributed and administered in 1963. So most people, basically, long story short, have probably had one dose of vaccine. At this point, it's considered if you've had that one dose,
you're a valid
MMR, it should be good,
to cover. All right, Dr. Green, do all countries require measles, mumps, rubella vaccination? What are the sort of worldwide immunization on that?
Not all countries have that level of public health mm-hmm. organization. So there are countries out there that have very high, high percentages of individuals with measles, mumps, rubella. And what happens is when people get measles, some of the children die, some of the children get complications. They can become, if they have a bad encephalopathy, they can become blind. They can have severe mental retardation or, intellectual disability. It's pretty catastrophic. And also, a lot of those countries have large cohorts in their families. There's, the birth rate's very high, and it's very easy to spread these diseases. And I worked in South Africa and Swaziland. I saw these things, and I have to tell you, this is just the observations of a guy who's been a doc in Hawaii and in Pennsylvania, and also a physician in South Africa as a volunteer physician. I would take the healthcare profile of our community every day over the healthcare profile of some of these other countries or communities that don't have access to immunizations or don't have resources, because when you see a cluster of people infected with something you feel as a physician you could have helped prevent, it's unbelievable. And I never met a mother or father while their child was being, while I was taking care of their child, who could be dying of meningitis or suffering a severe complication for a lifetime. I never met, maybe they're out there, but I never met a parent that didn't just shriek in horror that they couldn't have done something. They want you to do something. And that's my observation as a doc. I'm sure there are other positions.
Okay, let me go to Ms. Edgehill. What can you say to a parent of an autistic child whose symptoms manifested right after a round of vaccines? Can you address sort of your experience with that?
Well, let me just say that if an adult were to come to your practice and suddenly had lost the ability to walk, to talk, they became incontinent, they no longer process language, you would probably not consider it a coincidence. You would probably, you know, let's do a CAT scan, let's do an MRI, let's dig into this. But if a toddler came into your practice, you would say it's a coincidence, and you would say it's just autism, we don't know why this happens, it's all a coincidence, it happens around vaccine time. We're vaccinating children younger and younger, and now we tell pregnant women, you don't drink a glass of wine when you're pregnant, but let's go ahead and vaccinate you with pertussis. Let's give you the flu vax. There are studies that show a huge uptake in spontaneous abortion, well above what you would expect in a normal pregnancy after flu vaccination, after DTaP vaccination. When you look at epidemiological studies, you're looking at statistics across a wide swath of a population who have gotten a disease or who have received a vaccine, and you're looking at outcomes, but there's often no context given because it is a statistical analysis. But when I hear medical doctors tell me that there is no literature that shows any sort of a link, then I don't think they're looking in the right places. And I don't mean to demean your education and your experience. I think, though, that perhaps your observation is biased as mine is. You see sick people, let's face it. But most people who get measles, when I was young, we had measles parties. People got it. And you know what? You were sick for 5 days, maybe a week, and rarely were there complications, because oftentimes measles complications come with secondary opportunistic infections, and probably I would go to the doctor and he would say, you know what, you need an antibiotic. That's not happening. Right here I have the package insert for...
Ms. Edge, may I just interrupt you for 1 second? Mm. Bringing it back to their question about the autism, because you speak from experience, can you address sort of people's concerns in terms of symptoms manifested after a round
I think
vaccines?
You're right to be concerned.
And how
think
to treat
that,
it.
And I think that you should... Well, there's, it's hard to treat because autism is brain damage. Let's face it. We call it autism, and why it presents heterogeneously so different in people is because different metabolic pathways
are... There are some ways to deal with
it. There are, in fact, ways to deal with it, but it's not a one-size-fits approach. But, you know, I brought the package insert for DTaP, and one of the adverse events for the diphtheria, tetanus, and a cellular pertussis vaccine is autism. It's listed right on the package insert. What you receive, and SIDS, what you receive in a doctor's office, it tells you, you know, you sign this, we're going to vaccinate your kid, and they could, it's a 1 in a million chance that your child will be harmed. That's not a package insert, and these are all available on the FDA.gov website. And you should just take a look at what you're injecting into your child, and you should decide if, and do a risk-benefit analysis of your own. And if you're able, a genetic profile of your child for risk factors.
Are there studies being done in terms of increasing the amount of sort of genetic profiles and determining whether there might be groups that are not vaccine appropriate, Dr. Park?
I'm sure there are, but there's also studies trying to determine, are we seeing increasing instance of autism related to vaccine injuries, et cetera. There was a very interesting study, a very landmark study done by a group in California, actually looking at all their entire autism registry, because there was this wondering, you know, is there a link there? And what they found was that autism was increasing in incidence, but meanwhile, it was during a time when we were doing more and more to decrease things like thimerosal in vaccines, while we were seeing increase in vaccine exemptions. So it's interesting, why are we seeing increase in autism when we're doing all we can to decrease some of the issues around vaccines, as well as seeing increase in vaccine exemptions?
Okay.
On top of that, in terms of, you know, if you look at some countries where, you know, they've had, they have a full, you know, thimerosal and various other things, they don't see the same thing we do in terms of autism and things like
this. Okay, so take a look at Great Britain statistics, but let me address thimerosal.
But what I'm just trying to point out is, yes, there are studies out there, and everyone's trying to look at the different studies and try to understand better. I think, again, we're always trying to understand, and right now, at this point, there is not compelling evidence. It doesn't mean we stop looking, but honestly, from my perspective, what I find really sad to me as a pediatrician who cares about all these kids is the fact, and you know, I actually worry about the kids who have autism. I know you sort of discounted my concern, but I am worried, and what I worry most about is that I see all this effort towards looking at, well, it must be the vaccines, must be the vaccines, and I want to see more research into understanding autism in
you,
total.
You and I can get together offline, but let me address that.
Everyone is going to get a chance, absolutely, okay, to address that, because everyone I can tell is dying
what
to.
She said.
What I would like to do is I would like to go ahead and start with you, Dr. Horowitz, and then we're going to go around the table because it looks like everyone has information to share.
Well, the first thing is, most parents, like your question, have concerns as to how do you deal with the problem after it's created. In medicine, you have to diagnose before you can treat. You have to see through. Diagnosis means see through to the root of the disorder. Well, the root of the disorder in the vaccinations is you have what's called antigenic complexes formed. Let me give you an example of what that means. When you get injected with foreign RNA and DNA from, as I mentioned, all these different sources, bacteria, viruses, fungus, yeast, with smallpox, which we mentioned, it's literally cow pus. When you get injected with that, what happens is those protein particles land on your own host cell proteins, and it kind of like forms a globule, comes together, and that's what's called an antigenic complex, that your white blood cell bodyguards, which is your immune system, recognizes that whole complex as foreign. And it now sends messages out to the rest of the white blood cell bodyguards throughout the entire immune system. It says, if you ever see this, attack and destroy. Now you have the reason why, the best explanation, why you have all of the increases in all of the autoimmune diseases. 80 some odd different new diseases have been prompted, in my opinion, based on the evidence from the vaccinations. You have chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, lupus, MS, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, chronic crippling rheumatoid arthritis, adult and juvenile type 1 diabetes, Crohn's disease, Guillain-Barré that my mother died from after she got the swine flu vaccine in 1976. I could go on and on. There's 80 some odd diseases. So the reality is, these folks that, as you mentioned, have a paradigm, you have a view of the way a human being is, and that we're going to chemically treat it, we're going to pharmaceutically treat it, completely neglecting what the other guest had been previously scheduled, dealing with the holistic medicine. The fact is, I don't know about you, but I'm a spiritual being.
Okay,
energy being, and I want to be treated as such, and now you begin to integrate the entire religious and philosophical and spiritual, as well as scientific.
Okay, I want to give everyone a chance. Dr. Green, I'd like to go to Dr. Green.
Sure. Well, I would say that each of us can choose to be treated how we like to be treated, and that's part of the respect that we have for all humankind. My general belief about these multiple immunologic concerns and syndromes and diseases that have arisen is that there is a multitude of insults to the immune system that, yes, are very scary and terrifying. And you can talk about heavy metals, you can talk about pesticides, you can talk about all of these things that have developed over the last 100, 200 years, okay? That, in my opinion, is what is causing an uptick in developmental disorders that are tragic, and a lot of these other major problems. But to pigeonhole physicians as in only focused on one medical model, that's just not a reasonable way to approach things. That's a bombastic approach, but there are many physicians, there are many naturopaths who I have a great deal of respect for. People will choose the modalities they want, but if we base it on science, my feeling is we'll take better care of more people.
All right, Ms. Edgehill.
I just want to address her point about thimerosal quickly. Briefly, thimerosal was largely in 2001, 2002, if just ethyl mercury compound, taken out of childhood vaccines for vaccines for children 6 and under. It is still in the seasonal flu vaccine, and it's another one as well. But however, when we look at statistics, and I don't believe thimerosal is the sole cause of autism. I believe it's a contributing factor. When we look at our statistics from the CDC, the 1 in 68 figure is for children who were born in 2002. So you would not see the effects of thimerosal coming out of vaccines yet. So it could be that we'll see a reduction. But what I'm more concerned about with is adjuvants. and that they have been implicated in Gulf War syndrome, and they do indeed, they injure adults as well. So briefly, an adjuvant, if you're getting a killed virus, your body will not recognize it and go on the offensive. So we have to do something artificial to ramp up your immune system. So the most common one is aluminum hydroxide, ALHO3. It's been shown to be neurotoxic. And the paper that I get from Lupus, a peer-reviewed journal, it's by a work by Yehuda Schoenfeld. He's done a lot of work in what he calls autoimmune syndrome induced by adjuvants. And this is also a huge concern. And there are many foreign bodies that don't belong in your body. Flublok, flu vaccine, is cultivated in army flatworm. It's a parasite. And this DNA is going into your body.
Okay, we're in our final moment. Dr. Green?
The reality is people put a lot of terrible toxins in their bodies, and I think people could do a lot better taking care of themselves. And I don't think Dr. Park has had a chance in this last round, so I defer.
Okay, Dr. Park, really quickly.
I just say I respect the fact you're not a physician, so, you know, I understand that you don't
appreciate
understand and appreciate that you don't have the same perspective that we do. But just to your comment about how vaccines work, then I would present to you, how do you suppose natural immunity then occurs? It occurs exactly
great
the same.
Great question. I'd
you
love
know,
to
the,
answer
the
that.
Difference,
all right, we have 30
the difference
seconds.
Being that yeah. The difference is the vaccine only presents that part that will induce your body to recognize it as foreign, whereas the disease will do that and give you the disease itself and the complication. So the idea of vaccine is to try to give something, introduce something to the body in a safe fashion. And I agree, the studies need to continue.
Okay, Dr. Horowitz, you've got 10 seconds.
The word immunization is a complete fraud. Immunization is a natural exposure to a natural germ via a natural route. And vaccination is an injection. It's intoxicating. It's full of all sorts of chemicals.
Okay, and we're going to have to leave it there. Thank
you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks. The proposed Ho'opili community on agricultural land in Ewa has cleared a hurdle in the city council. It's also reignited the debate over whether Oahu should rezone more prime farming land for development. Supporters of the housing project say it's sustainable, with plans that include homes, commercial space, and schools.